Welcome to the Roostone Foundation podcast. We're here to listen to my bad parenting. Oh God, here she comes. Oh God.
Oh no.
No.
Baby. No.
Welcome to the Roostone Foundation podcast. I'm Bianca, and I'm sitting here tonight with the incredible poet and visual artist, Catherine Bresner. She's the author of the chapbook, the Merriam-Webster series, and the artist book, Everyday Eros. Her poetry has appeared in The Offing, Heavy Feather Review, Gulf Coast, Poetry Northwest, Passages North, The Pinch, and elsewhere. Her most recent book, The Empty Season, won the Diode Edition Book Prize in 2017, and it's an incredible collection, and I'm so happy to have Catherine here.
Thank you. I'm so excited to be here.
Just rolled in from...
Seattle.
Seattle.
Just flew in. On over.
Yep.
Yep.
Hopped on her donkey and...
Just rode across the U.S. to be here with Bianca and her family.
Yeah.
On this beautiful August Friday night in Vermont.
There's nothing like August in Vermont. It's the spiders have all hatched their eggs. The mosquitoes are sort of like having their 100th wind. And
I know. I got bitten. We don't have mosquitoes in Seattle.
What?
We really don't. We don't have mosquitoes or poison ivy.
Oh,
I know.
I kind of want to move there right now.
It's pretty okay. Yeah. I mean, I have a soft spot for New England, though.
Yeah.
I really do.
I know. Vermont, that's why we're
New
all
Hampshire,
here.
Massachusetts. All... Right. Massachusetts.
We all have a little soft spot.
Mm-hmm.
No, but it's wonderful. And you gave a reading Wednesday night in Vermont for the Antidotes books series at Wonder Bar.
Yeah.
With Jessica Field.
Mm-hmm. It was a wonderful reading too. Jessica is lovely. I love her poetry.
We had her on a podcast.
Oh, good, good.
Yeah.
Yeah. She, I actually got to know Jessica, even though she went to UMass, I got to know her through Boat.
Yes.
I'm the managing editor
of course,
for Boat,
her
so,
books.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I fell in love with her work, and then I fell in love with her, and it was a great, reading, really well attended. I didn't get a chance to visit Antidote Books, the actual place in Pelham.
Bummer.
I know, but Ruth was very nice, and it's a great series that they host. And,
it really is.
Yeah.
There's so much that I want to ask you, because I feel like we've been in one another's orbit over the years, mainly because, not just because we're both awesome, but because we both...
You're awesome.
We both love poetry, and we both love comics, and putting them together into this weird hybrid genre called poetry comics.
Mm.
And I wanted to ask you about how poetry comics first came together for you as a sort of... idea in actually calling it poetry comics and actually making them and putting it out into the world.
Well, you had a big part in that. You know, I don't think I actually knew... I knew about visual poetics, specifically things like ekphrasis and, you know... I knew Joe Brainard's work from when I was younger, but... I didn't really know that poetry comics was a thing or that it was called poetry comics until I met you at Flying Object.
Okay.
And you were spread out with your watercolors and your pens. And I looked down and I was like, shit, you can do that? And I was like, but I'm not a very good, I don't think of myself as an artist, actually.
Yeah,
yeah,
what is your visual artist history? Or
I don't have, I mean, I'm really, I just doodle when I doodle. And my first poetry comic was pen and ink on, like, little index cards that I scanned in. And then after that, I just, I like drawing a lot, but I actually kind of felt naturally inclined to do collage work.
Yeah.
And originally I started thinking about doing analog collage.
Mm-hmm.
But there's something actually kind of interesting about digital collage to me. And I don't know why I kind of gravitate towards it. But I was thinking about it recently. I was talking with a poet friend who's asked me why I did digital instead of analog. And I think it's because it seems to be more driven by the language. So whenever I want to search for something, I search it in Google, and then I come up with lots of different random images, and one image will lead to another image, and then I'll just start thinking about images and Googling and finding out. I come across old things in digital archives and public domain that I wouldn't find necessarily, or it would take hours and hours and hours flipping through Vogues and old, you know, Time magazines and to find. So I like the fact that it's language driven, that I have to keyword search a little bit.
That is really the difference, is that the tactile sort of physical paper that one would use when, and glue and scissors. Mm-hmm. And of course, so many people love that process of making collage.
Oh, and yeah, I think, it's a lot of fun.
Yeah, of course. And that's such a, that so exists in the visual art realm, I think, in terms of people who do projects with image and text together, who are maybe more trained or based in writing or in a text-based art. For them, it's like really fun to like use something with their hands and get. But what's really true is that it does often take you away from language, or text itself, and oftentimes it can be purely visual. And that's really interesting that you're saying this, because I wasn't sure that you did. I knew you did. I could tell you did much of it digitally, but it also, it definitely looks like between the two, you know, often.
Some of them look more analog than others.
Yeah.
And I have done analog work as well. But it is a different kind of process. And I think you're right about that, actually. I never thought of it that way, about like analog being something, like analog collage being something kind of particular to visual artists. And I don't, although I love visual artists and I'm inspired by them, I think of myself as a poet first and foremost, which is why I really like that it's poetry comics.
Yeah, me too.
Poetry first.
Me too.
And even actually, it's funny, I've been talking with a visual artist friend of mine about, you know, who works a lot in photography and drawing, and is very tactile in the way he approaches his art. And he was talking about hybridity, and I thought about poetry comics and how that relates. And I'm starting to think that for poetry comics in particular, it's actually not as hybrid as we think.
No.
Because it's not poetry plus comics being mashed up together as much as creating an entirely different genre that is singular, that one thing needs the other thing to exist. So it's not like, it's not like Ekphrasis, and it's not like, here's a bunch of pictures and here's some poems that go with them. But I don't know, I'm still kind of working through it.
No, but why do I say no? Why do we do that?
No, I agree.
No, but. No, no, yes. But. There really is this question that is definitely on my mind in doing these poetry comics and then doing my just poems or just doing art, whatever.
Poemy poems.
Yeah. And a lot of times I'll use, when I talk about words and pictures coming together, as being a way to talk about how poetry works, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So in that way, it is sort of like a hybrid discussion.
Mm-hmm.
But in the end, what the only thing that makes sense to me is that poetry comics are, in fact, their own genre altogether.
Mm-hmm.
Because poetry relies so, that traditionally poetry, the way poetry works and the way I'm almost now very interested in sort of philosophical, spiritual realms of understanding meaning. Mm. And, you know,
yeah, no,
not to like yeah. drop a big bomb, but.
No, let's go there. Yeah. I want to talk about that. No, because that's actually, that's yeah. been really on my mind a lot lately.
Yes, so, yeah. yeah. Me too. And I think poetry, it makes so much sense. Poetry makes so much sense to me in those discussions because clearly what's happening in our interest in poetry is a sort of desire to interact with the ineffable mystery of human consciousness and human, mm-hmm. you know, life. And that doesn't require drawings or pictures mm-hmm. or images. And at the same time, that's what I love to do. So mm-hmm. those things are linked as well. But I think the point that I was trying to make in that is that ultimately poetry exists as something that is an internal journey, not mm-hmm. a visual thing on the page. Is that...
No, that makes sense to me.
And the poetry comic somehow is this other way of expressing something else that's so part of the way that humans live on the surface.
Exist, you know? And experience the world. Yeah. yeah. Well, I saw that on your table, I glanced Joy Williams. What yeah. was that book?
The 99 Stories of God.
That sounds... Yeah. I mean, I didn't even know that she wrote that. Yeah. And it immediately piqued my interest because I've yeah. been thinking about spirituality and poetry and their yeah. connections and also, like, outsider artists. Uh-huh. Like visual artists have a deep, weird connection with spirituality
mm-hmm.
and like otherworldliness.
Yeah.
And in my writing practice recently, I've started, like in my morning ritual, I've started, this is very woo-woo.
Yeah.
I'm really woo-woo right now.
This is a safe woo-woo space.
Safe space. I've started pulling runes.
Mm, interesting.
Yeah.
It's so cool.
Yeah. And I carry the rune that I pull for that day. So runes are like little, I'll show you. I yeah. carry it with me all day
so
for cute. The day, but
it looks like a little white flat rock with an F on it.
Yeah.
But it's...
It's Scandinavian.
Yeah.
I
mean, people, I feel like when you hear runes, we're mostly familiar with these shapes that are very... twig-like, or they're very mimicking nature, but it mm-hmm. definitely looks like a letter, too.
Yeah, well, a lot of them are, like, look like letters or pictorial,
mm-hmm.
and then, it corresponds with this book of runes, so I wake up in the morning, I pull a rune, and then I read the reading for the day, and no matter what, like, the skeptic part of my brain... it doesn't matter which rune I pull because I'm always going to read myself into that rune for the day.
Mm.
And
yeah.
And the language in the book is actually extremely poetic, so it's a nice way to kind of like break into my writing routine.
Yeah. And really it's like reading any gospel or scripture exactly. in the morning where you look towards it to seek the wisdom that is always there, that has exactly. always relevance to your life, and although it feels... often sometimes like serendipitous what you do read
yeah.
that it so that's amazing.
Yeah, I really love it. It's been I've just been doing it this past year. A poet friend of mine gave them to me and I was like, this is really neat. And it also kind of reminds me of tarot cards.
Yeah, it's very tarot.
Yeah.
Card. Yeah.
Which I love tarot yeah. cards. I've never had my tarot read, but I've always loved them.
Do you know you have to be given tarot cards?
No.
For them to work? I was reading this in an Alexander Chi book.
Oh, yeah.
He had an essay about it. I didn't know that, though, but it's interesting that somebody gave you the runes. You can't buy your own tarot deck, apparently. You have to be given your tarot deck.
But I bought one that has pictures that poets drew, like, based on...
Yeah. The Emily Dickinson one.
Yeah, yeah.
I did the ones.
Oh, you did the ones. Oh, right. I'm sorry. Yeah, you did the ones. And then, yeah.
That was, like, no small task. I'm like, you know, people are like, you should do a tarot card deck. I'm like, great, give me $1 million in, like, 5 years to do it, because... It's like takes forever.
Well, you're creating pieces of artwork for every single card.
Yeah, and each one feels like super weighty and like every tiny thing you put in it.
Well, it's a great deck. Like, and I like how all the pieces work together. And it also feels very poetic. But I don't know how to read them.
Yeah, I don't.
So I just pull them out
at
parties. I'm like, look at these cool cards.
Yeah.
And then I put them away. Yeah. But they look real cool.
Yeah.
But someday I want to have my... palm read or tarot card reading.
Yeah, you should. I mean, we had C.A. Conrad here a couple months ago.
I love him. Yeah.
Really great with talking about different rituals of...
Mm-hmm. Somatic rituals, I know.
And tarot.
Yeah.
Well, I did want to ask you how religion and faith fit into your work.
I mean, religion, I will say.
Religion's less, such a weighty
I know,
word.
But I...
Religion. I was wondering if you would read a poem for us from either your book or from... Yeah,
that's okay. Fine. Okay. Sure, I'll read... I'll start off with one from my book. This is called 4 AM Mind. What an ordinary wound this is that I poke with grubby fingers tending to the past. I stand near the bathroom mirror, a naked wet shadow against the shower curtain scrim of a forest that I stand in. To believe in a thing is to nurse a small baby in the brain until that baby grows up to resent you for living the way that you do. Still, what a comfort to believe in Jesus, for instance, caspering around our houses, nudging our tender elbows off the table. We can be such delicious liars. I prayed like hell in the hospital, Bloody Mary, Bloody Mary, Bloody Mary, and it wasn't your fault that the party was fucking awesome, and it's not my fault that you couldn't handle your shit, light as a feather, stiff as a board. Everyone was there, and then they weren't. We lived by accident, and then only sometimes. So I chose that one probably because it had Jesus in it. We're just talking about religion.
Yeah.
But I think, yeah. So that's one of the palmy poems from the book. And and I was just thinking about, I think at that time I was like really railing against religion in a way that I'm not now.
Yeah. Can I see?
Yeah, sure. Right here.
I mean... Besides the obvious reasons why we should rail against religion, did you grow up in a religious family?
Kind of.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I'm from the Boston area and also Irish, so that also means I'm Catholic.
Right.
And I think I really hated a lot of the homophobia in that group and the closed-mindedness around a lot of the dogma. Mm-hmm. Of Catholicism and the patriarchy. I mean, a lot of it was just really repellent to me. So, like any good angsty Catholic girl, like I moved to the West Coast and found different artist circles and I don't really practice religion anymore, although I have a poet friend, the poet Jay Thompson. Do you know him?
Mm-mm.
He's from Seattle, or he lives in Seattle now. I think he's originally from the East Coast. And he kind of broke all the molds for me. He is a really amazing poet, queer poet, who's also extremely Catholic.
Oh, wow.
And which I found to be so badass. Yeah. You know, to like really hold both things, to have that cognitive dissonance of being able to hold like a religion and its traditions, very sacred, but also kind of he takes what he likes and leaves the rest. Mm. And he was also like, Catholics get the best swag. We've got the rosary, we've got like the stained glass and the incense. There's a romantic quality to it all that's really cool.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And there's a really goth quality.
For super sure. goth.
Yeah. And
like the craft.
Yeah. Very, yeah. And also great storytelling.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, great. Totally. Uh-huh.
There's, yeah, there's a lot of interesting things. And I think that, too, the, obviously the ritual that people, and the comfort of those, and especially, like, I feel like, okay, especially coming back to something that maybe you found comfort or structure in as a child, mm-hmm. for some people, the problem is that there's also so much often trauma there
exactly.
in those instances.
I mean, especially if you're talking about the Catholic
and,
Church.
Yeah, and the Catholic Church especially.
Yeah.
And for me, I found myself so interested in mostly like Christian, original Christian mythology that is actually, when I've been reading about it, it's like it's the complete opposite of what Catholicism is now, which was sort of what became Christianity was sort of like molded by the early Catholic popes and people who like gained political power and all, you know, all these like warring factions of like religions and what they were doing and who won out is like why we practice the way we do today. Hmm. But like a lot of original ideas in what we believe today to be all the familiar religions were often very different back in their original form.
And well, it has pagan roots, doesn't it?
Oh, like, totally.
Yeah. So
yeah.
I remember taking you might have to Google this after mm-hmm. because I can't remember, but I think that like the original telling, like the story of Jesus, he was riding a dragon.
Oh, damn.
Yeah. I'll have to find it. If I find it, you should provide
wielding
a link or something.
Light bringer.
Yeah, right.
Going to kill the doom.
He's like the original Conan.
Yeah.
Like in these tellings, you know, like people needed some type of hero that they found grounding and like they stole a lot of like the storytelling aspects from paganism and just brought it into like this superhero story. And then people are like, no, no, no. People have to buy it though. We can't go with dragons. Let's go with let's go with a ghost story. Let's say he died.
Yeah. And it came back.
Back.
Yeah.
Like that's more likely.
Absolutely. And a lot of the tradition of allegory storytelling was a way to discuss the undiscussable things. So they're all rooted in a sort of act of creative writing where we're talking about one thing, but there's this other thing behind it all.
Mm.
The negative capability, the invisible architecture, all those things we talk about now in poetry, that was like a really big part of spiritual storytelling was the that which cannot be articulated in knowledge of the great, you know, secret knowledge of being.
Yeah. Or especially by prose. It needs to be poetry in order to like even get close to that kind of articulation.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Nice.
And it's funny because, like, when I'm reading about these, like, you know, Gnostic texts found in jars and caves and whatever, I'm always like, there's never a picture in there, you know? Like, it's funny how nobody drew any sort of thing. I mean, but there were drawings in different contexts, of course, and especially if you go back to the Egyptians, who were so
wedded
to using symbol and image.
Hieroglyphs,
to,
and absolutely. Yeah,
and images on walls, too. So it, earlier when I was saying that image seemed to not be in the realm, I was merely talking about the sort of, like, now our way of our communicating or... I don't know.
No, I think I know what you're talking about. Like, the way that we understand image and text together today is, like, deeply, deeply rooted in the past. Like, it does go back to, you know, like, ancient storytelling and, you know, cave drawings. Mm-hmm. And, like, if we're talking about, like, poetry comics in particular, you know, like, it makes sense that we would try to explain something, you know, deeply spiritual, which is the human existence, through a genre, that can't be expressed in any other way, you know, like, and for me, like, and it seems this way with your work too, which is why I really gravitate towards it, is like the poetry comics that really speak to me a lot, speak to the personal in a way. Like, it's not something that's highly academic. I like the lowbrowness of it. And, which is why I like the comics aspect of it.
Yeah.
I think that it's not trying to be weightier than it is. It's just, it's doing its own thing. And it's not trying to, like the best poetry comics out there are not trying to explain anything at all. Like, I walk away bewildered about the poem in new ways.
Mm.
You know, I don't walk away with answers about anything. So, yeah.
Which is hard for people to accept sometimes, because they look towards image and text together for answers.
Yeah.
Because we're so trained to think image explains for me what text is saying.
But where's the fun in that? Where's the, I mean... Mm-hmm. Yeah, I
well,
just
it's like
yeah.
seeing, like, you read a book you love and you can't wait to see the movie adaptation because it's so fun to see, like, actual images to the things you've been imagining for so long.
But we're always, I mean, I would say 8 out of 10 times I'm disappointed. There's the rare, like, occasional To Kill a Mockingbird version, you know what I mean? Where it's like, oh, wow, this is... doing something new and different, or like it really nailed it. But, and don't even get me started talking about movies, because I could talk all day and we're tired of talking about poetry. But,
I just watched, by the way, I'd say this because it's too dumb.
What is it?
Last night I watched the newest Marvel, what's it? Was it Endgame?
Oh, Ender's Game?
And
isn't that based on a book?
Not Ender's Game. The newest Marvel, where they all... It's like the end of the epic saga.
Oh, really? Is it...
But every scene...
Is it Captain America? I honestly...
You don't know?
No, because I don't watch the Marvel movies anymore. They're super CGI. And I was also a DC person. Like, I like Batman Year One.
Yeah.
And, like, Arkham Asylum.
Yeah.
But did you like it?
No, I didn't. It didn't make a lot of sense, but more than so, I found really distracting was the fact that every scene was like a perfect shot of somebody's perfect hairdo.
It was
unbelievable how every shot was like, their hair was like, every hair was perfect. Even if it was like, they were all getting blown up by, like, missiles getting shot down from alien spaceships.
And then they look flawless.
And then they're, like, quote-unquote, messed up hair is, like...
It's, like, bedroom sexy Pantene commercial.
Yeah. It was really icky.
I don't like that in movies or... This is actually a good segue, because I actually don't like it in movies. Like, that pristine quality, which is why I don't like CGI.
Mm-hmm.
It's, like... burns the brain, kind of.
Yeah, and this, of course, was, like, all CGI.
All CGI. But I also, I like the grittiness of old film, like, 35 millimeter and 8 millimeter, and just, like, gritty storylines. And I like the grittiness of poetry comics and how messy they're, kind of almost purposefully a little bit messy. They're not, I mean, mine are. My poetry comics are like, you know, like I've had really great collages look at them and be like, eh, you know, like it's it's purposefully like not manicured. Yeah. You know,
even I mean, you have things like coming out of like
out of the frame,
out of the frames, and you often, it looks too that you're sort of bridging the gap between looking hand drawn and looking collage.
Yeah, I pull a lot of old drawings that other people have done.
Oh, is that what you're doing?
I do. Okay. Yeah, yeah.
It's really interesting.
Yeah, it's stealing. I mean, we do that a lot, and so I steal like old hand etched things, and then I actually fuck with them a little bit.
Right.
So I'll change the color, or I'll take part of it away.
Okay. Awesome.
Yeah, I like doing that, and also the book for that I did for Mount Analog, which was the Everyday Arrows book.
Mm-hmm.
That was an analog collage, but it was like the messiest. It got a review, actually, and someone, like, called it. They were like, this is the messiest collage we've ever seen. But he was, like, praising it in a way because it was, like, the book was, like, falling apart almost on purpose. Like, it had condoms stuffed in there. Wow. And it had all this porn. I used all this, like, 1970s porn. And it was, amazing. Like, glitter was, like, you know, like, it was. But that's what I like.
Yeah.
You know?
I like that, too. 100%.
Yeah. It's just more authentic.
Yeah.
Not everything needs to be airbrushed. And it, like, points to the fact that, like, making art should be fun and playful and not be taken hyper seriously. And although, like, I mean, I'm serious about writing poems. Like, I write every day, you know, or as much as I can.
You do.
Yeah. You know, I'm always jotting things down throughout the day.
Yeah.
The amount of time I spend, like, putting aside, I want to say it's, like, not as disciplined as my friend Patrick is about it. He's like writes, I think, for 2 or 3 hours a day. I write probably, I know. I wish I had the time.
I was just reading about Melville, and it's like, he got up at 6 o'clock and wrote from 7 to 2 every day. And I'm like, Jesus.
I know.
But he's a man who had like 10 million women serving him hand and foot in his big house.
That's very true. And even though Patrick is a man, I think he really hustles for that time because he's also like a teacher and has
not
a job.
Just about being a man, but in Melville's time,
he was weighed on hand and foot.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, you're like a mom.
I know.
Yeah. And I don't even have kids, and I'm still running around and trying to.
What, all those years I didn't have her, and I don't know what excuse I was using.
We're using the same excuse I'm using right now. I'm like, I work
all that time,
jobs and
I was waiting for the muse to strike all the time.
I think I do that too much.
Yeah,
and that's something that I'm finding as I'm getting older. Is it's not serving me well. You know, like I'm just, you know, I write probably disciplined writing, like a block out time for writing about 3 times a week.
Mm-hmm. That's big.
Which is big, yeah. I mean, like, it's Saturday mornings, it's Sunday evenings. I usually write in the mornings, though.
Me too.
Yeah, mornings are best for me. I always write from my bed.
That's really nice.
It is really nice.
I always, like, have to go downstairs and, like, get coffee.
Oh, I bring my coffee into bed. Coffee is definitely part of it. Like, I've got my coffee cup. Yeah. It's like a big gulp of coffee. I'm in my bed.
Writing in bed is like,
it's my safe space.
It's the best with your coffee.
Oh, yeah. And I just learned a great new word, actually, I think Dottie Lasky told me this word.
Because
She was talking about, Matthew Rohr has a new book coming out. I know. I'm very excited. And it's all about, he writes poems from a hypnagogic space.
Hypnagogic space. Okay.
And hypnagogia, I hope I'm pronouncing that right. I think I am. It's like the mucus state of waking.
The mucus state?
Yeah, you know that like milky weird dream kind of gross state that you're in when you wake up?
It's a mucus state.
Yeah. It's totally a mucus state. That's the writing space. When you're, like, in that weird brain place.
That's
when
great.
You're upon waking.
I'm always trying to hold on to that.
Yeah, no, me too.
Then
me
I
too.
Look at my phone and I'm like, fuck, it's over.
I know. As soon as you look at your phone, it's over because there are apps involved. Yeah. There's no apps in sleeping.
No.
I know. Same thing. I try to start plugging my phone outside of my bedroom.
Yeah.
So that it doesn't fuck with that hypnagogic space.
Right.
And there's a different word for when you fall asleep, too. It's hypno something else. Ask Matthew or have him on the podcast to ask him about it because I'm
Matthew, if you're listening, get your ass here.
Because it's a really, I think this is something that poets use a lot and we just don't talk about it.
Right, of course.
You know, that sleeping, waking. And
and so many times I have a poem in a dream almost that, like, right in that waking state, you're like, I will never forget this line. My God, it's good. And then the hypnogenic state drifts away, and so does the line.
And so does the line. I know. It's brutal.
And it's so... But I have, you know, barely legible things written on the backs of whatever was nearest the bed.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
That are like...
That you're like, this is going to be gold, like, at 7 a.m.
Yeah. And I get so excited when I find it. And sometimes it, like, seems, like, really dumb, but actually, you know, it's that weird, maybe three words together that, mm-hmm. like, just make a poem happen.
Absolutely.
You know, it all comes out of that one mm-hmm. phrase.
Yeah. Well, sometimes I like to purposely take naps. I'm a big napper, too.
Me, too.
Yeah, so sometimes I like to purposely take naps if I know I'm going to be writing afterwards.
Nice.
Smart.
Yeah. Take note, listeners.
Yeah, it's really good. Just take, not too long, because you don't want to get, like, depressed.
I love that you're a napper. I feel like I'm always like, yeah, I take naps all the time because I have Odette, and I'm always, like, taking a nap with her. I wish I could write while she naps, but I'm usually like...
No, totally. I would be that way, too, if I had a little baby.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't have an excuse. I don't have a little baby, but I still am a big nap proponent. Yeah, but
people in, like, Italy, like, they all nap.
Oh, I know.
I know.
Well, we have a bunch of working
here, like, I don't nap. Oh, I drink coffee all day long.
I mean, I drink coffee up until bedtime, but it does not stop between,
it does
like,
not stop. And I'm like, certainly in Italy, they do too.
Yeah, exactly. They've got it right. Yeah. No, big napper.
No,
take a
Americans,
nap.
you're not impressing anybody with your non-napping, okay? Mm-hmm. So let's get on this.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing about, like, that's why people are in such a rush to do, like, writing retreats. Mm-hmm. Because it forces that break
mm-hmm.
that a lot of poets... You know, like, writing retreats were only kind of, I don't know when they started happening, but I feel like they probably weren't as big in, like, the late 19th, early 20th century.
Yeah, your
right?
whole life
like,
was a fucking writing.
Yeah.
I mean, well, unless you're, like, working in the factory, but nobody exactly. was probably writing poems. I was all for the elite class were writing their poems and their manners in the country.
Exactly. Yeah. So there was, like, a lot more leisure time, a lot more time for walking.
There was a lot less distraction mm-hmm. and traveling. And
yeah.
It's true.
So I find myself having to carve out that time now from, like, all the different jobs. And then, you know, and so I also have a problem, and I feel like you have this problem, too, where I say yes, maybe, to too many things that I'm really excited about.
So my problem, yeah.
Which is... I think...
I'm sorry, everyone, who I owe you things.
Oh.
You're all waiting, listening to my podcast right now.
Like, why is she recording a podcast? Yeah. She needs to be writing my children's book.
Exactly.
She's working on it. Yeah. I saw it. It's beautiful. Yeah. It's going to be great.
And Nora, I'm sorry that I'm working on the children's book instead of making the animation.
She'll be working on that, too. No, but I feel like the same thing. I'm always, you know, trying to, you know, say no to things more. Mm-hmm. And I think that this is something that I don't hear as much from male writers that I know. I do actually think that this might be a gendered thing.
Mm.
Or
which part of it?
The fact that, like, I find that women or women-identifying writers tend to feel like they have to say yes all the time to different projects.
Mm.
Where,
and
when we just don't have the time.
Yeah.
And so I think about that a lot with, like, visual stuff, too, specifically, because I think about poetry comics as maybe being, like, a special, maybe even feminist space.
Yeah. I like to think that.
Oh, yeah. I think so.
But when I was first starting out doing it, it seemed like it was all these dudes who, like, whenever they talked about examples. I do it, too. Whenever I'm, like, showing examples, I'm like, oh, these are all men. But then I, like, get the women in there.
Oh, see, now I get you. Yeah. I get, I love the Matea Harvey book of Lamb with Amy June Porter.
Yeah.
It's awesome.
It's
such a good so book. Good because it's also like erasure and poetry comic, or like I don't even know if it's a poetry comic or it's so beautiful though.
But we can throw it in the
poetry comic
bucket.
Thing.
I think that's totally acceptable.
Yeah.
But Linda Berry, another one.
Linda Berry.
Yeah. Even though I don't think she thinks of herself as a poet at all. I don't care. But.
Well, then you also have Summer Browning.
Summer Browning.
You've got Emily Pettit.
Emily Pettit.
Yeah. Totally. Colleen Louise Berry.
Yep.
But
our friend,
which friend?
The one we did the...
Oh, Gabrielle Bates.
Yeah, Gabrielle Bates.
Oh, Gabby Bates.
Yeah.
Amazing poetry comic. Yeah. Yeah. So, and she and I met, through the University of Washington. So she saw me read, and show poetry comics, and she saw my doodles and was like, oh my God, she is similar to the way that I looked at your work. Like we inspire each other.
Yeah.
She was like, I want to do that. And turns out she's actually a really good artist too. Yeah, so like her art is really beautiful. So I'm glad that she stuck with that and didn't go a different route with her medium. But yeah, so we have like, I do think it's becoming more and more a female space.
I agree.
And kind of a female genre. So,
we'll read us another poem, maybe something more recent.
Sure. Yeah, I'm, finally, so that I just celebrated a year of the empty season coming out just like this last spring. So now I am working on a new manuscript, which is, I think it's going to be a manuscript. I'm not very precious about it in terms of, like putting together a book. I'm like, oh, do I have enough poems and do they seem to cohere? Yeah. And usually they do because usually I'm writing from a place of mood anyway. So.
Right, right.
But I feel like I'm working towards something new.
I mean, when one is on the trajectory of their career, you're just at the beginning, so you don't even know your process may be like developing right now. Like
it is. Okay. It totally is. So I'm just like, who knows?
Your process may be developing right now. That's like, duh. One day my process will stop developing and it'll just be one way.
No, you'll never be one way.
I'm just kidding. We're never going to stop. Processing.
I feel like we're
just going to process, so late at night, process out of here.
We're going to break into a Journey song of like, don't stop believing.
Yeah. Oh my God.
Oh, okay. All right, new shit. I'll read
new shit from Catherine Brisner. You heard it here first, folks.
I'm gonna read. I'll read two new poems.
Okay.
That feeling when there is an emergency and that emergency is you. Your ghost haunts, shakes chains, sighs melodramatically. Floats the bell tower of your being and sobs, sobs, snots into your body, a hanky. What did you do to the light here? Thick, yellow, tar, rubble. You blasted, you torched, you slut. What did you do with the body? You're wet. Gobs of it. Stains cushions. Sinking deep. The dirty damp of you wrung out. Open that gun you call a mouth and murder me.
Mm. Fabulous.
Thanks, lady. So I've been writing these poems. There's like a string of them. You know, I'm thinking about, like, acronyms and how they're like, oh, they're so murderous. I hate acronyms so much, especially online. And so I only recently found out, because I'm out of touch with everything, that feeling went.
FOMO,
LOL. Yeah. Like, you're never laughing out loud, ever. Yeah. You're just, it's a placeholder.
LOLZ. Then you're really laughing
then out you're loud. You're really laughing. You're smiling and laughing so hard, you're busting a gut. It's so sad. Yeah. It's like sad that we use these, but I use them all the time.
Yeah.
Is it so sad? I mean, it kind of is, because it's like lack of real communication.
But like, how can we express via text
that you can't.
Crying, laughing so hard?
We can't. And I mean, and this is also the ultimate, I mean, not to get like too existential about it, but this is also like the sadness about language itself, is that it's never going to actually express the thing truly that we experience. We're always reaching for it. It's that negative capability that you're talking about. But it's hyper that way with text. It's like, it's almost like laughable.
What about emoji?
An emoji.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
It's like no text.
No text.
It's like grunting at one another with our, you know.
With our yellow faces.
Yeah.
Yeah. I actually, for my work, I once was asked to rewrite A Tale of Two Cities using emojis.
Oh, my.
I'm not even kidding you.
Did you?
Well, yeah. It was my job. I had to do it.
The entire book?
Yeah.
Like, how many emojis was it?
So many emojis. I'll send you a copy. It never made the shelves.
Okay. I've heard of this, but I didn't know that you'd done it. Well, I've heard of somebody doing something like
that. Someone probably did it much better. This was
it wasn't The Tale of Two Cities. Maybe it was something.
It was sad. Why are you taking this, like, out of all the books you could pick, too, you couldn't pick, like, Alice in Wonderland. Like, you
picked
a tale.
Book?
Yeah, you'd put.
Jesus.
Oh, God. So, and then you pick A Tale of Two Cities, and you're like, right, now show.
Two Gentlemen in Verona, come on.
Yeah.
Hands down.
Hands down. So, yeah, so emojis, acronyms, I've been thinking about that, and so I have a bunch of poems that start with that feeling when. But this next one does not start with that. It's just called Plainly.
Oh, is that? See, I'm so, like, behind on that.
That's
like,
what I mean, is that I was out of touch. I only found out that that feeling one is TF. What is it? TFW.
I'm always like, Ben, what is LMOW? Like, I'm always, like, I'm always, like, G-chatting him, like, asking him. He's like, why don't you just Google it?
Just Google it. Like, no.
No.
Yeah. So that's when I recently found that out. I was like, oh. And then it spawned the poems.
That moment when?
That feeling when.
Oh, that feeling.
Yeah.
TFW.
Not to be confused with T for the win, which for FTW.
I've been using that one. That one's kind of fun.
For the win.
I'm always like chicken eating chicken feed for the win. I don't know. I'm not using
Bianca it. Has five chickens?
Six.
All named after poets and writers.
It's a little sentimental, but
it's so
women
sweet.
Writers.
All women.
Because they're all hens.
All hens.
Bitches.
They're super sweet. Okay, so this next poem is just not, it doesn't start with that feeling one. It's just called Plainly.
Oh, all this lead up and.
Well, nothing.
Wah, wah.
Plainly. When I say that I am in a forest fire, I say what I mean. The pine trees are on fire in California, all the way up, like a run in the stocking of a very fine calf. What I mean to say is that I am feeling the exact opposite of safe about the future these days. Every fire must be tended to with very exact touching. In the great drift of objects, we imagine ourselves tectonic. I live over a fault line. I won't move back. I won't move back. When I say you are a natural disaster, I mean it in the most literal way possible that a human being can be one. That was my attempt at writing a love poem, if you can believe it.
It's really sad. It was really beautiful. But it was such a love poem to the place, too. And
yeah,
I mean, a very West Coast ode.
Yeah.
But there's the the texture of the fire, it was consistent throughout, and then to end, it was very almost as if the fire was slowly dying into little embers that were then squashed out, stomped on, pissed on. No, I'm just kidding.
Pissed on the fire. Have you heard of the big one? That Seattle. So Seattle lives literally, like, our city is on a fault line.
Dude,
the New Yorker article about, like, us all going to die in,
I was like, why the fuck is anyone live there?
And
the lava,
like, tsunami, and then the lava from Mount Rainier when it erupts. Yeah, we're totally fucked.
Like, any day, right?
Yeah, it's, like, gonna happen. In fact, there was an earthquake recently, like, within the last month in Seattle, which never happens, and we had a 4.8 earthquake, and I slept through it. But when I heard about it the next day, I was like, oh, I'm totally going to die in the big one because I'll just sleep through it.
The big one.
Yeah. There was an article written in the New Yorker about it a few years ago. And then I moved to Seattle. Like,
you're like, rent's so cheap here.
Only it's not. But yeah, totally. Vermont living.
Yes.
I miss it out here, though. It's really nice coming out and staying in this area and back to New England, and just, it's actually making me want to write poems just being out here.
That's great.
Yeah, it is.
Well, that's what we want, you know, like with the foundation, we want people to come here and get to experience that. And
yeah, well, come out to Seattle. We can do the house swap thing. And
definitely, except Seattle's kind of scary right now.
I know. Well,
I'll go to Seattle and the big one will hit.
Yeah. So sad. Let's set you up.
Swore she'd never leave home. Finally, she did. Isn't it ironic?
Don't you think? A little too ironic. It's hit that bewitching hour.
It's like Ray. I'm like my poor father-in-law next door.
Oh.
Well, thank you, Catherine, for coming all this way from Seattle for this conversation. It took her 2 weeks to get here just to talk to me for 45 minutes in my office.
Glad to do it.
No,
no, it really was fun.
Seriously,
it's been a wonderful trip out in Western Mass in general and into Vermont.
Yeah.
I'm glad also I got to see the Roostone Foundation. If any of you have not taken a trip out to the Roostone Foundation, you totally should come out and help Bianca and Ben and Odette.
Put the roof back on.
There's a lot of work that, like, it's coming along, though.
It is.
It really is. It's like, I really peered in. It looks really cool.
Thank you.
Thanks for having me on.
Keep doing what you're doing, because you're doing it real good.
Real good.
Real good.
You too, lady. Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. Bye.